The hunger strike by members of the Palestine Action Protest Group in British prisons is entering its ninth week. Of the original eight, three still refuse to eat, and according to reports, are perilously close to long-term damage, even death. Today we're looking at refusal to eat as a form of political protest, its long history in this country, and speaking to a survivor of one of Ireland's longest and deadliest hunger strikes. It's News Talk Daily, I'm Shane Beattie. Lawrence McKeown spent 16 years in prison as a young IRA volunteer, including 70 days on hunger strike in 1981. Coming close to death, Lawrence fell into a coma, survived only after his mother intervened. He went on to become an author, playwright and academic. Lawrence has written extensively about the psychological and emotional impact of hunger strikes, including on the protesters themselves and also on their families. His latest memoir about his time in prison and the fallout from the 1981 hunger strike is called And Flowers Grew Up Through the Concrete. Lawrence, you're very welcome to News Talk Daily.
Thank you, Sean.
Great to have you. Emma, we'll talk about your own experience on the podcast, but first I might just start by asking you about kind of the news right now and your thoughts on the ongoing hunger strike among the members of Palestine Action in British prisons.
Well, I think, Sean, it's horrific that people end up having to take such drastic action, and it is drastic action. To highlight demands that are really very simple, I mean, one of their main demands is to be released on bail. That's not a huge demand. They're not guilty of anything yet. They are on remand. If released on bail, they would obviously be closely monitored. Their passports could be taken, etc., etc. So the fact that they have to go to such lengths after being held in prison for a long time, way beyond what would be the normal procedure in England for people charged with what are really minor offences, is horrific, and what it's putting their families and all through. So it's tragic that it's happening. And I mean, the effects of hunger strike are that well, you never know the moment someone can just die unexpectedly. But I mean, it exposes what the stance of the current Labour government is. I mean, Starmer, who has said he is very proudly a Zionist, and seems to be, from he came into power, wants to show that he's as strong as a Donald Trump or anyone else. I mean, see that after the egregious attack on Venezuela and kidnapping of the president, that Starmer's one of the first to come out and support Trump in his action. So I think the hunger strike there has to be tied in with that, and this idea that they'll push through like really, really draconian policies. And it's worthwhile remembering too that it was the British Labour Party that introduced the criminalisation policy in the north of Ireland, which then led to the blanket protest and the hunger strike in 1981. It wasn't the Tories. Maggie Thatcher happened to be in power whenever the hunger strike happened, but it was the Labour government that introduced it. So it is interesting looking back, and one of the people learn from history, but it would appear that that's not the case, and it's actually not what Starmer wants.
These eight Palestine Action members began their hunger strike in November last year. We've three who remain on hunger strike. They're close on 60 days on hunger strike. You did 70 days. Can you put yourself psychologically to where their headspace is now?
Well, yes, very easily. It's a lonely place to be on hunger strike. You know you can die at any minute. You have demands there which you hope will be granted, but as the time passes on, and especially in our case as well, as more and more people die, then you get to a point where I suppose you feel that you're going to die before those demands are met, and all you can hope for is that others coming behind you will benefit from them. I think the things that sustain us is knowing that there are people, and the same with the current hunger strikers, as with us, that you have family and community and support of you. People wishing you well, people out on the streets protesting. I've seen there the footage of the protests outside the prisons. But yeah, it's a very lonely place.
Yeah. I'm conscious for younger audiences, they will not remember 1981. So if you wouldn't mind, and I'm sure you've told this story many times, why did you join a hunger strike in 1981?
Well, very simply, basically, our whole protest began because of the colonization policy that was introduced by the British government, by the Labour Party, I'd say, actually introduced in 1975. It didn't come into effect until the 1st of March, 1976. But what it meant was that anyone sentenced after that or anything to do with the conflict would be regarded as a criminal prisoner rather than a political prisoner. Prior to that, they were regarded as political prisoners and had what was called political status. You could wear your own clothes, you didn't do prison work, etc. So you had your own command structures. So despite the fact that we were arrested, I was arrested in August 1976, so the policy had already been introduced. Even though we were arrested under special legislation, interrogated under special legislation, which meant you could be held for 7 days without access to a lawyer, and then sentenced in special courts, the Diplo courts, that had no jury. We were then to be regarded as criminal prisoners, and we refused to do that. The first prisoner sentenced, first Republican prisoner sentenced under the new legislation was Kieran Nugent. He was taken to the H blocks of Longkesh, which was the main prison, but the H blocks was the new part of the prison built specifically for this policy. And he refused to wear the prison uniform, was badly beaten up and given a blanket to wear, and that became the blanket protest. And Kieran did his full time on it and was released. Protest lasted for 5 years, intensified in 1978 into the No Wash protest. I didn't wash from 1978 up until the 2nd of March 1981, the day after Bobby Sands began his hunger strike. So the whole protest and hunger strike was to get our demands, ironically, five demands, the same as what the prisoners in England at the moment have, five demands. And again, they were very simple demands, right to wear our own clothes, right not to do prison work. All the things was access to visits and education, etc. I'd been on the protest for 4.5 years. I was 24 years of age. I think we believe that we weren't criminal prisoners. We were political prisoners. And that we had a right to be treated as political prisoners, just as our comrades still were treated just a few hundred yards away from us in what was known as the cages part of the same prison. The hunger strike ended with us getting one of our demands about to wear our own clothes. It was the most significant one. And through various struggles and later years, which I've written about, we ended up getting all of our demands. By the time I left the prison, it was a totally different prison.
Yeah.
And I had entered, and you would have thought that people had learned that lesson. But unfortunately, history often repeats itself.
But hunger strikes are high stakes. How hard of a decision is it to make to go and decide I'm going to go on hunger strike?
Well, it's a very tough decision, Shane. Tough in the sense that, I mean, politically, it wasn't tough. I totally believed I was a political prisoner. I believed that we were in the right. But you also know that by volunteering for it, you're then taken on board. You know, you're going to the fore of the struggle. You've never been in that situation before. So trying to work out and be very truthful to yourself, what will I do when it comes to a point where I know I'm near death and probably going to die. And no one can answer that question fully. All you can do is sort of be very regularly honest with yourself. No, this isn't some romantic type thing. This is something that's literally going to see you dead. And if anybody had thought it was romantic, a number after I'd volunteered and then was told that I would be joining the hunger strike in a couple of weeks' time and got a communication from the IRA's Army Council, which is written on one cigarette paper. It said, "Comrade, you've volunteered to join the hunger strike. Do you realize this means you will be dead within the next 2 months? Reconsider your decision." Army Council. Very blunt message, but it was the type of thing that was required for anybody who was volunteering at once. So yes, it's a very difficult one in that sense.
A blunt message from the IRA Council, but a factual one. You did 70 days, but others did not survive. Many others did not survive.
No, exactly. I mean, one person who just died at the end of last year there, Ben McLaughlin, joined the hunger strike and didn't realize it prior to that he had a bleeding ulcer and had to be taken off the hunger strike after 8 days. So it's that thing again about not knowing no underlying health issues that people may have. Bobby Sands just died after 66 days. Martin Horson, who died just after 46 days because his body just, they couldn't keep down water, which is critical to be able to take. And his kidneys collapsed and died a very violent death very early on. So So yeah, I think what was shown that there's no particular pattern. Kieran Doherty, who was a TD, as we said, just as Bobby Sands was a member of the British Parliament, Kieran died after 73 days. But yeah, there's no, you couldn't look at someone saying, yes, that person could, you know, do 60 days and longer, like 70 days. It's, you just don't know how your body's going to.
Yeah. We're hearing stories of the deteriorating health of the Palestine Action protesters, though it certainly is high stakes. Your mother intervened.
Yes, what happened during our hunger strike was, and our families were put in that awful, tragic situation. They supported us. My family weren't Republican. Most of the families I met of those imprisoned with me didn't come from a Republican background. They were radicalized through the whole struggle in the North. They wanted us to have the demands that we were pushing for, the campaign for us. My mother was spoken platforms. My mother was the quietest woman you could ever have met. So there were just four of that. But as the hunger strike continued with more and more deaths, like families began to lose hope on it. And then there was pressure put on them by the likes of Father Fall and the Catholic Church that they should intervene. And the pressure was always on the women, because it was the women largely who visited the jail, the mothers, the wives, the sisters, girlfriends. And the argument put across that, you know, a good mother would intervene and authorize medical intervention. But if he fell into a coma, what was called power of attorney shifted to your next of kin, which in my case was my mother. In other cases, it was wives, and people authorized medical intervention, which basically was that you were given a syringe full of glucose and then rushed to the outside hospital. And that's what happened to me on the 70th day. I always thought, because of the length of time I was on it, I probably would have died fairly suddenly, like Tom McAwee, who died the ninth hunger striker that day. I'd spoke to Tom the 2 hours prior to him dying, and about past his door, and he was sitting up in bed, and 2 hours later he was dead. So yes, what happened was that families began to intervene when their relative passed into a coma, and the hunger strike was, well, it's called off because of that, literally, because it had lost its effectiveness, and it was actually getting to that point. Then it was almost a battle between hunger strikers and their families, which was never meant to be. They were the backbone of our support.
Just back to that very hard decision that people make up to this day to go on hunger strike or not. Is there a genuine belief when you start it that it is going to change things, that it will change the position of governments or prison bosses or whoever at the time?
Well, that's certainly your hope, Shane. I mean, everybody who died on the 1981 hunger strike wanted to live. They wanted to get the demands that we were after. We felt that that was the only way we could achieve it. We couldn't continue on and protest indefinitely. It had gone on for 5 years. A number of prisoners had become really physically sick. Others had become mentally ill as a result of that. So it wasn't a situation that could just go on and on. We wanted to bring it to a head. So yes, the hope was that because of our actions and the support on the outside and publicizing of it, that we would get the demands. As I say, we ended up getting one of the ones, which was a very significant one, and through other means later on, legal and other ways, we were able to achieve the rest of them. But it was never done out of any fatalistic approach. It was done out of a hope that this will shift government policy, because it will prompt people to take actions on it. I mean, it's been addressed in the same. There's been very little media coverage until recently about what was happening in England in terms of the hunger strike. So there has been an attempt to try to censor what was going on there, but thankfully that has changed now, but more and more of our focus on it.
People wonder, I suppose, psychologically, how do you survive during a hunger strike? But then I'm also wondering, if you spend 16 years in prison, how you survive psychologically. Do you think you just innately have that inner strength, or did you have to find it from somewhere?
I think there's an inner strength as well, and then as Bobby Sands writes about there, the inner strength, the spirit of freedom in you, that you believe that you're right in what you're doing. So that sort of sets you on a path, and then you have comrades around you, and you have families and communities, and you have an international community as well, as we had. I think it was during 1981 hunger strike, the Republicans maybe for the first time realized just how much people around the world, particularly in countries that had been colonized, actually looked to the Irish and to the Irish struggle as a source of inspiration. So, yeah, it's a collection of all those, but I think you have to, first of all, have that political belief and understanding of what it is that you're involved in.
why you're involved in it, and then what you're prepared to give for it. Are you prepared to lay down your life for it in this instance? And I mean, I've often said that the 1981 hunger strike couldn't have come about without that 5 years of intense protest and extreme conditions prior to it. So it's all part and parcel of you know, the conditions, the circumstances, the history, but also certainly is your political motivation and your own mental strength.
On the idea of hunger strike as political protest, why is it still so powerful and still employed throughout history up to the present day? Hunger striking is employed as a way of protest.
I mean, certainly in Irish Republican history, I think it was about 22 people died on hunger strike in the 20th century. But that hasn't been confined to Irish Republicans. Suffragettes and others took part in it. It's probably because it's one of the few, if only, means of protest left to you when you're in a situation such as being imprisoned. You can do various other things, but a hunger strike is probably something that really brings it to the fore. I mean, in terms of the Irish psyche, compared to the whole thing of the Callaghan and, you know, fasting outside someone's door in terms of Breton laws and how this would bring disgrace on that person. For us, certainly, there's that almost instinctual thing about the fact of someone hunger striking going to that length. It must mean that they that there has been a grave injustice. But I think probably in this case too, have taken some sort of inspiration from the Irish hunger strikes, in particular in 1881, and close links are between the Palestinian struggle and the Irish struggle. And many of us have been involved here. And in fact, former hunger strikers, myself and others, have organized events and protests and fasts because of the whole offence in Gaza. So I can see why he was imprisoned in England because of the involvement in various actions in support of Palestine, would see hunger strike as a way to highlight their protest.
It's 45 years since your hunger strike. I'm just wondering, do your views evolve over those 45 years? I was always struck that Nelson Mandela had his prison guards at his inauguration, and people were shocked by this, but he was talking about, you know, you have to move on and heal and reconcile. Do you, as the years go by, change your views, or do you still hold the same views you think you had in 1981 when you were on hunger strike?
Well, I certainly like to think I've developed and matured in many ways, but I think within the same politic. I've been involved a lot over the last 20 years as a former Republican prisoner, engaging with former members of the British Army, the RUC, loyalist ex-prisoners. I'd be very well known for a lot of that work, so I don't have an issue with that at all. I see it as a continuation of our struggle for the reunification of a national territory, United Ireland. It will get a different United Ireland and will come about in a different way than I would imagine when I was 17 joining the IRA. So yeah, I still hold those beliefs. I think that we learn from history, or should learn from it. I mean, that's why I published that recent memoir to talk about what happened after the hunger strike and how we had to change and develop within the Jail and Change tactics, etc., but all geared towards the same end, which was to get our outstanding demands, and then finally to have the prison close and release of all prisoners, which came about as a result of the Good Friday Agreement. It was ultimately there has to be a political solution. So it's not so much that I have changed, as that I don't think I've developed and deepened my politic and become more mature than I was in earlier years. But again, along the same trajectory.
Well, we could talk to you all day, but we would like you to read your memoir, which is called And Flowers Grew Up Through the Concrete, a prison memoir, 1981 to 1992, where you're looking at after the hunger strike.
I mean, when the hunger strike ended in 1981, that was the end of that type of protest. For 5 years, we had a head-to-head confrontation with the prison authorities. We'd been locked up 24-7, which is how we'd been on a no-wise protest for 3 years. And 10 of our comrades had died on hunger strike. They were just comrades, who were close friends, people we shared wings with or shared cells with. We were still refusing to do prison work, but we just couldn't remain static. And it meant sitting down, had to take some very soul-searching decisions, which ultimately meant going into the system to undermine it from within. And that's what we did, and we did it very successfully. I think the first reflection of that was the mass escape, which took place in September 1983. So that was less than 2 years from the ending of the of the hunger strike. They've had the largest escape in the history of British penal institutions. And that in itself brought about an end to the whole issue of prison work. So, ironically, they'd achieved one more of our demands. And the years that followed, a whole series of campaigns and taking legal issues and whatever else, we would only get the rest of our demands, and then we were able to do what it was that we wanted to do. I write about it, develop our own comprehensive political education program, and then developing that more into arts and creative projects. It established a magazine in the jail in 1989, The Captive Voice, which continued being printed for the next 10 years right up until the prison finally closed. Book that myself and Brian Campbell and Phelan Hagen published about the hunger strike for me, which served my time. So I suppose when people think of the jail, they think of the blanket protest and the hunger strike and the escape. But what I wanted to show in the memoir, and I wrote a previous one about the blanket protest and hunger strike, but in this one I wanted to show what happened afterwards and development of tactics and strategy, and seeing that there were other ways that we could pursue our struggle within the jail and to do so very, very successfully. We may have often said we didn't want the jails to be a battlefield. It was the British government who turned it into a battlefield. And whenever they decided to drop their criminalisation policy and engage with us as political prisoners, then the jails became a quiet place. Just unfortunate that couldn't have done a lot earlier.
It's called And Flowers Grew Up Through the Concrete. And I think anyone who's interested in your story will certainly enjoy the memoir. Lawrence McKeown, thank you very much for being here on News Talk Daily. And that's it from the podcast for today. Thanks for your company. Don't forget you'll find me every morning on News Talk with Breakfast Briefing, and I'll be back in your feeds again tomorrow with another News Talk Daily. Until then, bye-bye.